Hey, Drew, how you been?
Hey, Mark, I'm doing great. How are you?
Good, good, good. I know we're a little bit past it, but you a big fan of Shark Week?
You know, I think I've had it pointed out to me, and I've never actually watched any of Shark Week. I confess I am not.
Yeah, you know, funny enough, me neither. So it's probably appropriate then that I'm bringing up sharks and Shark Week, you know, months after it happened. It's in July, I think, usually. It's
like I wouldn't have even known.
The peak of summer.
You could have told me it was right now.
Well, we're having our very own Shark Week right now.
Oh, excellent.
Because we are going to talk about the aquatic killer, the shark.
Shoot for the captive ball.
I don't know if that's what they're called or not, but I wanted to talk to you a little bit about some sharks today.
Oh, okay.
Specifically, you know, I think when people think of sharks, a lot of times they think about sharks and shark attacks.
Oh, yeah.
And I was curious if you happen to know, since 1958, I think when they first started capturing the data, do you know how many worldwide unprovoked shark attacks there have been?
Oh, well, it's a good thing we went back to 1958 because that's when I started counting.
Right. I mean, obviously, like yeah. It's a good place. It's like... It's
how
like
many
the Linux
worldwide? Update. How many unprovoked shark attacks?
Yeah, and I think unprovoked is the way they measure a lot of these shark attacks, because if you're just being an idiot and like throwing fists with a shark, then you kind of deserve it.
Okay, I'm gonna try not to overthink this. I mean, the fact that you're asking me probably means that it's something unexpected, but I'm not gonna overthink it.
Okay,
I'm gonna say
you're like, historically pretty good when I give you trivia questions,
like estimation questions, right? Like, let's see, I'm gonna say like. Two a year, so it's been 70, like 150.
Wow, that's way too low. I thought you were going to guess.
Oh, okay.
I thought you were going to guess on the extreme.
See, and there I overthought it then, right? It's probably what, like 10 a year or something.
2900 since 58. So.
Oh wow, that's actually a lot worse than I thought. I really thought that it wasn't going to be that high.
Yeah, so that's 2900 unprovoked shark attacks since 58.
I guess the world is a big place.
Though. The world is a big place, but so of that 2900, how many of those shark attacks were lethal?
Of the 2,900, how many were lethal?
Yeah.
Ooh, I really think that usually they're going to bite and run. So I'm going to say 30.
633. So you're at like,
wow.
Roughly a quarter. A quarter ended up being lethal.
So it turns out I'm vastly underestimating
sharks.
The actual threat of sharks.
But what's interesting is you're on the right. You're on the right track, because most shark encounters for unprovoked shark attacks are indeed kind of bite and run. And what's happening is it's in the same way that babies experience the world by putting everything in their mouth. Sharks don't have a lot of sensory appendages in which to engage and interact with things that they don't know about. So a lot of these instances are they see a human in the water and like they don't – sharks – like what is this? The only way I can really figure it out is if I try it with my mouth. And unfortunately for humans, you know, a shark just getting a taster – can result in some grievous injuries, and that's how you end up with such.
Is there anything for which that isn't like a grievous injury, like
like any victims of a shark were?
It's like a blue whale, like no problem.
I think
not a big deal.
That's a good question, right? I didn't look into that. There's got to be. I don't know. Maybe like I don't know. Do sharks bite sea turtles? I got to think something that's got like a hard
maybe only
exterior.
Once.
Yeah. Right. It's a little too hard, too crunchy. There's got to be some things out there where they could survive. But anyways, for the fleshy meat bag that is a human, it's not great.
I think if anything, all I'm taking away from this conversation is that I am really underestimating
all right, look,
existential
look.
Risk of sharks.
We'll make this a little bit easier.
Here in Salt Lake City.
We're going to make this a little easier for you. In 2023, how many worldwide unprovoked shark attacks were there?
No, this is just a division problem. I mean, come on.
Well, I'll give you a slight hint. It's the world has gotten safer.
Or sharks have gotten deader.
There is also that.
Okay, so let's see. If it's gotten safer, maybe it is down to like 10.
69.
Nice.
How many were fatal?
10.
Yes.
Ooh, yeah.
All right.
Finally.
Lastly, do you know which country leads the world in unprovoked shark attacks?
Okay, this one I have no real reason to suspect this, but I'm going to guess that it's a country with a long coastline and a lot of warm water, which to me says India.
It is the United States.
Wow.
The United States.
Wow.
We had, and this just helps, again, you know, 69 shark attacks in a year worldwide maybe feels high, but 36 in the States last year, and two of those were fatal in the U.S. And it's interesting you pointed out that, you know, maybe it's because of the declining shark population. All of this brings us up to today's pinball topic today, which is Jaws.
Oh, I thought we were going to go with the Meg.
Ah, yes. Alas. Well, another day.
Okay.
Someone probably has to invent the Meg pinball first.
Pat Lawler, if you're listening.
If he's out there. So, Jaws, the pinball machine, is based on the 70s movie from Steven Spielberg. The whole series, actually, but predominantly the first one, I think, is where most of the inspiration of the machine focuses. And just kind of a quick anecdote about the movie, Steven Spielberg, a handful of years ago now, has come out and like expressed regret for the harm the film Jaws has done to the perceptions of sharks. Generally speaking, shark attacks are pretty rare. But once the movie came out, it led to, in part, right, like ascribing this all to Jaws is a little bit silly, but it to like something like a 50% decline in great white shark populations because there was like a bloodlust for sharks, for humans hunting sharks.
People were going out with like oxygen tanks and harpoon guns and just blasting away.
Just
wow,
getting revenge for Amity Island.
Or Bruce.
Amityville Island? Amity?
Yeah.
So Jaws the Pinball Machine is one of the newest machines out there today at time of recording. It was released in 2024. It is a Stern pinball machine, and its creator is a guy named Keith Elwin. And this is the first time we have ever seen a Keith Elwin pinball machine here on the show. It is currently still in production at the time of this recording, so we don't have any details on the number of units that have been produced so far or shipped out. So that number is still increasing as far as I know. Eventually, when production stops, we will have some idea of number of machines. Anecdotally, it feels fairly prolific in the pinball space.
Sure.
I could think of a number of venues around town that have Jaws already, and I think any sort of pinball bar, it seems to be a popular one that's cropping up out of new manufacturing machines.
Yeah, I went to the Pinball Museum in Las Vegas a few months back, just because, you know, why not when you're in Vegas? What else is there to do? And I think they had like three of them all set up next to each other.
Oh, wow.
So, and that was probably much earlier in the production run, and they still had managed to get three of them all next to each other. So
yeah,
they were crowded too.
Oh, that's great. I have seen it since its release, and it's only a few months old, really. I think maybe towards the start of the year, springtime. I've seen it a handful of times already, so for full disclosure, I have played this machine a few times before, and as is the case with most modern Stern pinball machines, it comes in a couple of different varieties based at different price points. So the most bare bones version is the version we're going to see today. That's the Pro Edition. And then there are tiers up above that, premium and then premium and limited. And premium and limited are basically the same play footprint, just the limited edition is like a very exclusive run, usually more interesting art, cabinet art, and maybe some like toppers or artwork or toys that are going to be specific to
maybe
that.
It's signed by the shark.
Yeah, right. Sure. In this case, we are going to be focused on the Pro machine, but it's worth noting the premium one has sort of a main difference where there's like an actual, like there's an upper playfield like boat area with another flipper and stuff. And so we will miss out on that today.
Yeah.
But let's talk a little bit about some gimmicks that we will get to experience. And then I'll tell you about a couple of objectives on what to focus on, because looking at the play field, it can look a little overwhelming, but realistically, it should be pretty straightforward.
Okay.
So from a gimmicks point of view, there is a chum bucket that we get to engage with.
I'm sorry, a what?
A chum bucket. A chum is it's like fish guts that you throw into the water.
Oh, okay.
To help attract sharks and other predator fish, I guess.
Like if you didn't know how incredibly dangerous sharks were?
Yep.
Oh, excuse me. Yeah.
They're very safe.
Very safe. So you do want to attract them.
You want to chum for sharks all the time.
Yeah.
So it's like a white bucket hanging in the play field.
Okay.
The chum bucket is a captive ball that you bash. And then once you bash the chum bucket, there is then a chum line, which is like a section of water in the water, like in fishing, a section of water where you've like exposed chum, like where fish are going to come up and feed on it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So there is then a chum line section of the playfield, because most of the playfield is going to look like open water, which is kind of a cool concept. And as you continue to chum the line, the water will get redder. So like there's going to be a like progressive LED.
So it's like you are kind of pouring chum into the water.
That's the idea.
Cool. Come on down and chum some of this shit.
Cool.
And so it's got some, that playfield has LEDs that'll shift from a blue to a red color. In that same area, there will also be a shark fin that pops up, like a drop target that pops up in that area and moves for us to target.
Oh, it's like a moving drop target.
Yeah, so that should be kind of cool. Neat. From a gimmick point of view. There's also, the first thing you'll probably notice, there's a big shark toy in the center of the playfield kind of busting out of a cage, and you can bash him for points, and I think probably to start some modes. It's not super clear to me on the rules there. And the other thing to mention is that there's not a magna save, but there is, you know, there's an action button that you can use that if the ball starts to drain in the out lane on the left side, you can use it as a life preserver. And so at your leisure, you can push the action button, throw a life preserver, and basically give yourself a free ball save.
Oh, this is like the little donut-shaped kind of thing, like the ring life preserver?
Yeah.
Okay, got it.
And so you can hit that to save the ball if it's draining out the outlane, which is kind of a cute way to implement it, I think.
Sure.
A couple of objectives to note before we kind of go play this and scrutinize it. There are a variety of modes for the game, and it's a very mode-focused game, and they're all focused on Jaws himself, right? So you're going to have different shark encounters that you can go with. There's modes to close the beaches from shark attacks. There's modes to hunt other kinds of sharks.
There are all kinds of sharks in the waters, you know? Hammerheads, white tips, blues, makos. And the chances that these bozos got the exact shark...
Oh, there's no other sharks like this in these waters.
It's 100 to 1. 100 to 1.
And then there's a big series of multi-balls you can unlock about, like, sort of the final battle with Jaws himself. Going kind of one by one, just to give you a sense of like what those are, shark encounters are going to be the main kind of thing you're going to encountering in the game. And basically, it's just hitting the lit shots that show up, like hitting arrows and following those along. And those
pretty typical kind of pinball stuff.
Yeah, just and like they have different names. Like there's like Night Swim and whatever. And it's just, yeah, your standard, just follow these shots, get
points.
Find
the lights, hit the lights.
Get the points.
Yeah, yeah.
The closing beach objective are basically your hurry up shots. So when those will be unlocked from hitting, again, certain drop targets or lanes on a number of times, then the hurry up starts. And then you hit the hurry up, you close the beach and rescue some swimmers. That's like the thematic story there.
Okay.
Another mode that's sort of unique, I don't know that I've seen something like this quite so much, is they're called bounty hunts. And so you hit a couple of shots, at some point the ball will be trapped somewhere, and then you know you basically are choosing an objective that you're going to accomplish. And each of these objectives are different shark types: mako shark, thresher shark, hammerhead shark, tiger shark. And you choose your shark, and then you have to accomplish the objective. The objective is hit the spinner so many times, hit a certain number of ramps, and like it's variable for each type of shark.
So it sounds kind of like a mode that layers on top of whatever mode you're
correct.
Currently
on. Correct, yeah. So okay. it doesn't impede progress in anything else, but it becomes sort of a background objective with no timer.
Oh,
so
that's nice.
That's
nice.
Pretty unique from what I've seen of other, like when you pause to start a new mode, it's usually like now this is your whole focus and there's a time limit. This is not that.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. I like that.
And lastly, I think, you know, multi-ball, again, is a great thing to focus on because those are usually easy wins. The way we get a multi-ball here, the Jaws multi-ball is there's the big shark toy that I mentioned, and there's the big chum bucket. Bashing the chum bucket chums the water, and then you have to hit a bunch of shots will have red arrows. So a bunch of LEDs are going to be everywhere giving shots different colors over time. So then you hit red shots after you've chummed the water. And then once the water is fully chummed, you would hit a yellow shot, and that starts the multi-ball. There are three different Jaws multi-balls that you get. So basically is if you accomplish, when you're in a multi-ball, and this is true, I think, of a lot of machines, when you're in a multi-ball, you then have like objectives in the multi-ball, whether you know it or not,
yeah.
Right? There are like jackpot shots and stuff. And so that's true of this. The first multi-ball you get with Jaws is called Reel Him In. And so if you can get through that multi-ball and accomplish all the objectives, if you then go through that same process, chum the water, hit the red shots, hit the yellow shot to start the multi-ball, then you'd get the second Jaws multi-ball, and that's called the chase.
So it's kind of like you're unlocking subsequent multi-balls with the same shots in between, but then you have different objectives during the multi-ball?
Yes, that's okay. My understanding. I've never gotten past, in my casual play, I've never gotten past reel him in. But the other Jaws multi-balls are the chase and then lastly the cage dive. And so like it should follow narratively.
So this is like the storyline.
The storyline of the first Jaws movie. Jaws. Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about that for a second. Are you a big fan of the movie?
Yes.
Oh, great. Tell me about it.
Is the answer. Well, I'm going to get ahead of myself a little bit because I didn't see Jaws until earlier this year. Uh-huh. And the impetus to watching it was first encountering this pinball machine.
Okay, like in the wild somewhere, right?
Yeah. We were, in fact, I think it's when you and I were in Seattle was, I think, the first time I saw this.
Yeah, I think that sounds about right to me, too. And I have to confess that at the time, I had also not seen Jaws the movie. So this is kind of one of those weird cases where instead of like a brand or a movie attracting you to a pinball machine, the pinball machine seems to have like driven us to the classic brand, I guess.
Yeah. And it's sort of what's interesting is I don't know why I hadn't bothered to watch Jaws beforehand because it is a very, it walks a really great line of like, it's sort of engaging. Like it's a little bit funny. Like it doesn't take itself too seriously, but like the stakes feel important to the movie. There's a lot of suspense. Like, It's really well executed. Let me see if I'm saying this right. This Steven Spielberg, I think is how you say it. I think he's going places.
Yeah. I will watch his career with great interest.
any other thoughts about the machine before we go check it out?
No, I'm eager to see if the pinball experience lives up to the Spielbergian movie experience.
Let's go.
It's got lifeless eyes, black eyes, like a doll's eye. Don't seem to be living at all when it come at you. Till it bites you. And then the eyes roll over white. And you don't hear nothing but the screaming and the hollering.
What are you doing? Are you doing the speech from Jaws?
Mm.
Are you doing Jaws? We don't have time for this shit.
All right, welcome back. Well, what'd you think? How's your Shark Week progressing?
Yeah, progressing maybe not, but man, did I have a lot of fun. Like, I think that, you know, just when you walk up to the machine, it's beautiful. Like we've talked a lot about in the past, sometimes things, pinball machines don't really have like the pinball art style. I think this one did, but more importantly, it did it in a very unique way that like it looks great just from the start. And that set me up for a lot of fun playing for sure.
Yeah, that's my big impression as well. As specifically, I felt like the colors draw me in a way that, I don't know, maybe you just don't see a lot of that kind of blue on a pinball machine. And because so much of Jaws is about the ocean, because surprise, that's where sharks live most of the time. Yeah, you've never heard of a land shark?
I guess.
That's a beer. Ayo. Oh,
didn't know. Okay.
Oh, really?
No.
Oh, okay. The colors, I think, like that have this like beautiful blue ocean color. And it, yeah, there's something that's just very pretty to look at. I also think my other big impression, my big takeaway is that I felt like it honors the IP that it's using, but I also like that it didn't, like the movie in some ways, doesn't take itself too seriously.
Yeah, I think that's fair. It is, after all, kind of like a fantastical tale, but the game, I think, did a good job of kind of paying homage to kind of a good campy movie, but still being like a fun thing in its own right. Like, it was
yeah,
great.
Yeah. Great. So as we do every time, we're going to analyze this across the three areas of focus. That's design, theme, and fun, and just use those as kind of discussion points to figure out where this game kind of lies for us in terms of experience. And I think it's also one thing that I think is important to note, and I don't think our discussion will be blinded by this, but like, it's so new that there is always a chance that we could be blinded by the novelty of just like a new shiny thing.
Sure.
It's worth acknowledging that. So if you feel like we're diving into the wow, shiny new toy aspect too much, let me know and we can reel ourselves back. That's an angler pun for you. All right. So I'll start us off for design. I thought there's a lot of cool lock mechanisms that are used here. And I say that term, I guess, slightly loosely because there are no real ball locks. But what happens is, you know, we talked about the chum line and like this drop target fin that comes up and moves around the chum line.
Yeah.
Before you're allowed to hit that shot, the lower left flipper will lock, or the whatever lower flipper. It's for me, it was always the lower left. The lower left will lock, will hold the ball while the fin pops up.
Yeah,
and then like directs you to what is effectively like, you know, the combo shot or something.
Oh yeah, so it's not like a ball lock mechanism.
No, but it's in the traditional like the sense.
It's like a ball hold. Yeah, yeah. I see what you're saying. Yeah, I
and
like that.
That also happens in the mini. There's a mini flipper right near like the ball launch, where again it'll hold the ball there from time to time and let you do like a cross play field shot or let it drop down. And I think those are kind of cool when you see these kind of using the flipper to hold a ball.
Yeah,
kind of
I remember seeing that in a couple of like old machines from the 90s, but it doesn't feel like many do that these days. And it's fun. It's nice because it gives you a chance to kind of like draw your attention to some of the harder and more important shots. Maybe it feels like just annoying if you know the machine so well that you know exactly where you're supposed to be hitting it every time. But I appreciate it.
There's a design element that I've learned about since we've played too that is related to that I wish I had known about before we went to go play. And that is this mechanism they're calling the flip lock, which is with the mini flipper specifically, in a multi-ball, you could use the action button. If you trap a ball up there with the mini flipper, you could hit the action button and it will just freeze that mini flipper holding that ball. So you're basically playing the multi-ball with one less ball.
Oh, wow.
So you can target.
See, that's really cool. I feel like I see people who are really good at pinball kind of doing stuff like that.
Doing that manually.
Yeah. They hold a ball on one of the flippers and just play with the other one. But if you could do that with a top flipper and really have both the other, that would be game changing. Man, now I want to go back and get a multi-ball and try that. That's amazing.
What a cool design element that I've never seen. I've got a few other design notes, but I'll talk about one other and then I'll turn it over to you. The skill shot for this machine is such a cool design element.
Uh-huh.
We've talked in the past, skill shots, generally speaking, in a lot of machines, you plunge it, you try to go to the top area, and then in most of them, I feel like you're trying to drop it down one of three or four lanes, whichever one's lit up, and you get like a skill shot.
It feels almost like a, you know, like a crapshoot, like just kind of the luck of the draw.
And this one, if you plunge really heavily, right, goes out into the main play field, unlike Twilight Zone, which we recently talked about and has also a unique skill shot mechanism. Jaws similarly is rewarding you for light touches.
Mm-hmm.
And here it's a progression of light touches. So the first skill shot you have to do is you plunge it, and there's a pop bumper just outside of the ejection point of where the ball comes from the launch.
Yep.
If you hit it light enough so that the ball just gently comes back and the first thing it touches is the pop bumper, that's your first skill shot. If you successfully complete that, subsequent balls, your skill shot now is you again want to be delicate enough for the ball just to come out and then come back. But now it can't touch the pop bumper, but there's a lane to the right of the pop bumper and like the launch lane where you need the ball to fall down.
So kind of like on the Twilight Zone we talked about where you want it to go up and then immediately drop back down.
Yep.
But in this case, it's without touching the pop bumper.
Yeah,
that was hard.
The third one, if you can get to that, is launching this is so different from the first two, which is why I think this progression is such a cool design element. Is the third one is you want to launch the ball, and now it has to go all the way across the play field to the far left side and hit one of the side targets before it touches anything else.
Yeah, that. So I'll just say right now, I got the first two at least once, but I never could get that third one.
No, it's impossible. I think a few times I tried to. When I tried to get to the second or third one and I launched too heavy, I actually unlocked a secret skill shot a couple of times.
Oh, what was that?
If you hit the chum bucket directly without hitting anything else, that's one of the skill shots. And then I looked up, there's a second
one. Off a flipper or off the plunge?
Off the plunge, yeah, without touching. And again, all of the skill shots involved are from the plunge, the first thing it touches.
First thing it touches. So no other targets, no other bumpers, no flippers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What notes do you have on design? I don't want to keep...
No, I mean, you've touched on so much of it. I think the main takeaway for me is that it feels like a truly innovative machine. We've sometimes talked about how some modern machines or some Stern machines kind of feel a little samey, like they're just kind of the same kind of classic pinball machine with a nicer LCD screen. This certainly was not that. It had so many unique things. So you mentioned the skill shot, the ball holds. I really liked that, like, left side, that kind of like upper out lane. I don't even know what to call it. I don't think I've ever seen anything quite like that in a pinball machine, where it didn't feel like it approached the play field at all. It's almost like they found extra space in a pinball cabinet to make this little side out lane that sometimes the ball pops in there and it comes back down onto the flipper, and like, it's an important shot for the game.
Yeah. I almost called it an orbit, but it's like you hit the left orbit, and instead of orbiting back around over the main play field, it just orbits to the left into this like little nook that it created.
It's like an inverse orbit, where normally the orbit will shoot it back to the middle of the machine. This like shoots it over to the left. Yeah. I thought that was just like a really neat shot. Another like cool design thing, and this is another like physical mechanism that I really liked, was the reel shot, which was kind of a more traditional orbit, right? I think a tight upper orbit shot like that, where you go in one side and it kind of like, you know, rockets around and comes back down.
Yep.
That can be really punishing sometimes, where it just goes up and it keeps all of its speed and comes straight back down. The reel, I feel like, slows it down just enough that it comes back out the other side with not as much velocity. And that was like such a great on-brand way to achieve, you know, a game design goal. It's making the shot more approachable, because you hit the shot and instead of it flying back out at the speed of sound, it comes back down at a very approachable speed, but it does so with a fishing reel, which I thought was just so cool. And it's almost like they took a spinner, which is a traditional pinball element, and just sort of like rotated it on its side 90 degrees. And now you've got this kind of like lateral spinner. I just thought that was so neat. So
yeah, that's a cool call out. And it is, I think, especially a nice touch to make that feel like it's a fishing reel, by the way. Like, it's a kind of a cool way to implement that spinner.
Just so cool. I don't think I've seen something quite like that. So that was just really neat. A couple downsides that I noticed are really just kind of one big one. And I think you might say this is just a skill issue, but I do feel like some of the shots, especially that one just to the left of the shark, there's this like upper ramp that it's got to go up, and then it gets captured somewhere up there.
It does like a big U-turn.
Yeah, like a almost like a half pipe or something.
Yeah, it looks
right?
like a wave kind of.
Yeah, yeah.
I think in premium, that's how it gets up to the fishing boat play area. But in this version, it just kind of comes right back down to you. But yes, I know exactly what you mean.
I think it comes down like a wire guide thing, not the same path.
Oh, yeah.
Because this is the problem that I had, was that I would hit that with what felt like a proper amount of velocity, and it wouldn't catch up there, and it would just come right back down. And there were just a couple shots like that where it felt like, come on, you know, like I'm hitting these shots, and they come back down at like an unfair angle. Yeah. And like,
it's almost like it should be like half an inch shorter or something, right? Like, so that like it more often than not.
Yeah. And maybe this is one of those things where it's like really particularly tuned for, you know, a very particular angle of the table, you know, 15.34 degrees or whatever. Otherwise it's too steep or too shallow.
Yeah, but if that's the case, that's not like wiggle room that you want. Or like, you don't want to have that tight of a space. Like, you want the wiggle room is what I'm saying.
Yeah, so that was like, that was one of my only complaints, was that some of the ramps felt like they were a little too punishing. But I'll be honest, like, overall, I was so enamored with the innovative elements of the design and the kind of fun progression of the gameplay that I gave this a 5.
Oh, yeah. I put it at 4, and I debated whether or not for 5. And I agree with you on, like, sort of the knock there. It was the same one that you had. The only other kind of notes that I have here is that, one, it's in a way, it feels like a retro modern kind of machine. Like, it feels, something about it gives me vibes of like an older era machine. And I don't know what it is about it.
Interesting.
But like, it just, I think like the aesthetic, or maybe the fact that it's Jaws, and like Jaws is from the 70s. Like, I don't know. It's like, it's very clearly got a lot of modern touches, but like something about it for me just evokes like a classic feel of pinball.
You know, I was getting almost the opposite, you know, vibe wise, that it's not like modern machines that we've seen in that it's...
Yeah, maybe that's why that feels like retro.
It's almost like a new era of machine. Yeah. Like we're out of the 20-teens and the early 2020s, and now like Jaws is the start of some new wave of designing pinball machines.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I wanted to write, like, retro-futuristic is not the right word, but like something about it where it's like a really modern spin on something that feels old. The only other thought that I have about the design is part of the reason I might be so taken with it is that, you know, we haven't seen much of this creator's work before. Keith Elgin or something. Keith Elwin. And I wonder too, like, you know, maybe we're just finally getting into like a new, like to your point, like if this is like a new design for like this new era of pinball, maybe it's because we're getting newer designers and their creativity coming through.
That's a really good point. I just tend to assume that everyone who designs a pinball machine, you know, came up sort of in the same 60s, 70s era, and they're now older but still capable of designing kind of the same machines they did 50 years ago or whatever. But, like, maybe Keith Elwin really is just, like, a new generation. I don't know.
I mean, I have to hope so, because you can't, you know, Pat Lawler having 30 years plus of designing machines is great, and he does a good job. But like the pinball world needs to survive beyond him.
Yeah. Hopefully Keith takes up that torch.
Yeah. So I gave it a 4 out of 5. You gave it a 5 out of 5. I think that's great.
Yeah.
Talk to me about theme then. How do you feel like this machine tied into making you feel like part of this world?
Yeah, I really liked it. I'm a sucker for a good toy. The shark one was great. Mm-hmm. The chum bucket was great. Mm-hmm.
It's nice that it swings,
by the way. It's like almost like a little spinner itself, right? Yeah. Like, not quite, but like it feels like it the way it's hanging there. Really good. I thought it was a really pretty machine. Like all that blue color was so unique. It really evoked feelings of the ocean.
And I think they used the LED to some effect with that too, if I remember right. Like I think.
Oh, like a kind of a shimmering water effect?
Yeah, like a little bit of just like dark to light blue movement.
Yeah, I think I noticed that, but didn't think
mostly in like the chum line, I think.
To write it out. Yeah, so I really quite liked it. One thing I really did like was that a lot of the tie-ins to the movie felt thematically appropriate.
Yeah.
So we talked about the life preserver, mm-hmm. right? Like that, it does, you know, what it says. There's kind of like an oxygen shot, I think, at one point.
Yes, I think so.
And like that is obviously like the ending of the first movie.
Spoilers.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, like a 50-year-old movie.
You haven't seen Jaws yet, yeah. And like the chum line with the shark going along, like that could have been any moving target, but it was like a shark fin, right?
Yeah.
And like, so it felt appropriate to have all those things be thematically relevant. Yeah. So I think really cool. One of my favorites was the match screen at the end of the number. Do you remember it was?
I do. I have a note about it myself.
Yeah. The beer can, just kind of cool little cheeky thing. I quite like that.
What I like about, you know, I like everything that you said. I agree with that. But I think this helps bring Jaws, and we're examples of this. We talked about this before we left to go play it. This helps bring Jaws to new audiences, right? The reason either of us have now seen the movie is because casually we saw this in a bar. We're like, oh, it's kind of engaging. And then went out and sought out the movie. And I think, I don't think we'll be the only people to have that effect. Like, and part of that, I think, is the success of the pinball machine not taking itself too seriously. The match is a perfect example of that. You have Quint crushing a beer after he drinks it, and then Richard Dreyfuss like crushing a styrofoam can or a styrofoam cup of something, and then like the crushed beer is like the match number. Or, you know, there's the scars mode where like it's one of the shark encounters where you just hit different colored shots, but it's like progressing through like them comparing their scars. And so like the iconic scene of like Quint like pulling off his fake tooth and giving a dorky smile like shows up. And I think
was that one of the videos that showed up? I don't remember that.
Yeah. Okay. I think it's stuff like that like has fun with it, right? Like there's like a memeability or something, right? That like you're kind of leaning into that helps give it a broad appeal. I also thought that having compared this to playing the premium version where there is a boat up top, and the boat in the more expensive version is kind of cool, and we're reviewing the pro version, which doesn't have that today, but I felt like I didn't miss it. You know what I mean? Like, it didn't feel like we were playing a less than experience.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong. I think the premium version did have one feature we were missing out on with the shark.
Yeah, I think it's animatronic in some way, right?
Like, yeah, I think it comes down and there's a magnet that like picks up the ball.
Something like that. I couldn't remember specific because I think the premium one we played was in Seattle. And that was a while ago now. So that I put a note that I was like, I think there's an animatronic shark that would be fun in the pro model. And it seems like that's like a minor cost to put in like the pro one.
Yeah. Like the shark actually picking up the ball feels like something that should happen no matter
what.
Yeah.
Or like it just bursts through or something.
There's a Stern Jurassic Park machine with almost the exact same kind of gimmick with a T-Rex.
I think that's also a Keith Elwin.
Oh, machine. Are you serious?
I think so.
That's so funny.
When I looked him up, I wanted to see, was this like his only, like, is he this new? And he's done a lot of these like recent popular Stern machines.
That's great. Jurassic Park, that's great. We'll have to check that one out officially. Yeah.
So what'd you give me on theme? What's your score?
Yeah, I gave it a 4. I think that not a lot of notes. I really liked so much about it. It did feel just like maybe it was not perfect. Like there were some things missing. I really would have liked to see kind of more of a unique spin on the Jaws idea, rather than just so strictly sticking to kind of like sharks and like the movie and like this thing from the movie. Like a little bit of unique theming, I think, can go a long way in making this pinball machine kind of its own thing rather than just a part of the movie. And I think because we played the pro, there were some features that I knew I wanted theming-wise, like the shark actually eating the ball.
Yeah, I mean, I agree that it felt like it was... I gave it a 4 as well, but I don't feel like I was wanting the features of premium necessarily. And I don't think I needed anything like outside of the IP itself to be included. I wondered if there was more that could be done to give you like vibes of like being like I felt like I was missing some of the suspense elements.
Yeah.
That didn't come through in the movie, right? Like, and like, I don't know how you add suspense into a pinball machine. It felt more campy than terrifying, and that's fine. But like, I feel like maybe the Jaws multi-ball or something should feel more frantic or something that like gives some credence.
Yeah, maybe
to this.
Maybe some different music somewhere could have gone a long way. It's hard to say because 4 is a great score.
Yeah,
and thematically, I thought it did a really good job.
But it felt like
something was missing, and I'm trying to like describe that now after the fact.
On the conversely, and part of the reason why I think the theme is so strong, you have stuff like Night Swim, which is like the opening scene of Jaws, with the drunk college guy and the girl who gets eaten by a shark by swimming at night. When you get the night swim mode, the lights on the table get dimmer.
The play field gets darker. See, that's the kind of thing I think I was immersed enough in the game that I didn't notice. But that is nice. I think it's kind of a cute touch.
So 4 out of 5. So far, excellent, excellent machine. So fun then. You know, for me, I thought the shot combinations, the toys, the colors, all of that's like engaging and keeping me kind of hooked. I really, really liked the unique skill shots. It made me want to keep retrying them, like, you know, on the next game. Like, I couldn't get skill shot 2, I thought was very difficult to reliably hit. But the downside for me here and is that this was a machine that, like, on bad games, it ate quarters. Like, there was – and it's not even because, like, there's decent ball save timers and things like that in the machine out of the box, but it just felt like – conversely with when we played Adam's Family or Twilight Zone, where if you missed a hard shot, you felt like you could recover. Mm-hmm. Here, I felt like if I missed a hard shot or a shot that I was specifically aiming for and I missed it, it could punish me by just like an insta drain. And I felt like that always detracts from fun for me. And it's a hard line for designers to walk, I think.
It is incredibly hard for designers to walk. And I imagine that for some really hardcore pinball enthusiasts, you know, they're so good at hitting their shots that like they want that to be kind of the line. And so I can't say for sure whether this is like, you know, an objectively good or bad thing to design for, whether you should design for people like us or for people who are maybe more professional, you know, pinball type people. Mm-hmm. But I had a lot of the same frustrations that like it didn't quite get me hooked in the way that I wanted it to.
In the way that Richard Dreyfuss harpooned, or Quint.
It didn't quite harpoon me in the heart, right, the way that I wanted it
to. With a yellow barrel.
And once again, don't get me wrong, I'm giving this a great score. I gave it a 4 out of 5 because, like, I will 100% play this game anytime I see it. I thought it was so good. But it was not, like, top tier for me.
Yeah, it's a real, I think, gem out there of modern, newer era Stern machines for me, like the uniqueness, the theme tied in. I give it a 3 out of 5. This is, or 3.5 out of 5. This is the first time I've ever, I think, added decimal scores.
Maybe welcome to the club.
I know. You've corrupted me. And that, honestly, for me, it's because of the fact that it's just going to eat away quarters on bad games. And I think that, you know, for me as a like an amateur player, if I put $10 into it, that would even out over the $10 play period, because I would have some really good games. I would have some probably really quick games. But my lens on that one was like, for people who aren't diehard or really into pinball, I see that just being like a, like there's so much shine on this machine that one thing could sour a whole experience, and that's a bummer.
Yeah, imagine if you're kind of like a really casual pinball player, you play once a year, you see a big crowd around this machine at the bar, mm-hmm. and you think, okay, I'm going to go check this out. And $1 and 3 minutes later, you have nothing to show for it. That'd be pretty frustrating.
I don't know if you noticed, that actually happened to us while we were there.
Oh, okay.
We were playing, what was I playing next to it? Do you remember what was right next to Jaws? It doesn't matter. But there was a couple next to us, I think, on like a date together. And one of them leaned over and was like, are you good at pinball? And I was like, oh no, definitely not. And they're like, yeah, me neither. And then like a minute later, I'm still on ball one or something. And they're like, is that it? Like, I think his girlfriend or whatever was like, are you done? And it was just like a little bit like...
Was she was watching you?
No, she was watching him. She was watching him play, and he had already drained three by the time I was still on ball one or whatever, because Jaws can be that unforgiving.
Yeah.
And it was I like they walked away and they didn't play another machine, presumably because they wasted $1 or $2 or whatever it was.
And that's tough because, like, you know, pinball's not an easy game, but, like, you want someone to have fun regardless of if they
do. So
– And that's one of the interesting things about a really fun game is that I actually am not sure how good I am at a game like, you know, Twilight Zone, like we talked about recently.
Yeah.
But I had a lot of fun doing it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to look up, you know, all-time high scores on the internet because I'm sure it's not even close.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be embarrassing.
But, like, regardless, I had fun on short games and long games, and there were none that were, like, really, really short.
Yeah, so for Jaws, for me, the short games, I felt more frustrated than having fun. And so for me, that's a 3.5. And so even still, that's like upper tier, right? It's better than most.
Better than average, yeah.
So as is tradition, after we play a handful of games just to get a sense of the machine, figure out, you know, how we feel about it, then we do our competition games. We play three games, take our best score of the three, and then kind of crown a winner. And so for me, my first game really was... Well, the first game I wrote down in my three competition games was my best game. All of my investigation games were hot trash, mm-hmm. to the point where I remember asking you, like, can I, like, look up a score on Stern, Stern Insider high score and use that? It was like, it was not going well.
How embarrassing.
I know. But then I think right after I had that conversation, I had, like, the game of my life. My high score ended up being 123,655,650, which I know doesn't crack a lot of high scores for people, but... is my best Jaws score ever.
Yeah, and you mentioned the Stern Insider. For those who maybe don't know, that's a little online kind of tracking thing. You can sort of sign into the machine using your phone.
Yeah, it tracks your high scores.
QR code, track your high scores. And on top of that, at this particular location, there's a TV that will show kind of the top 10 scores of the
quarter, I think.
The quarter, so they do like a three-month quarter period. And yeah, neither of us cracked that with Jaws, but... had a lot of fun. So you got 120 something?
123 million.
123, yeah. That beats my best score of the day, was 86,392,160. Though in the spirit of transparency, I did look up. I had a better score at one point online that was saved through that thing. But I think that was on a premium machine, so we can't count it.
Yeah. Well, it was as always, it's always a good competition. Nice to know that we were out there hunting the sharks together and keeping the beaches a little bit safer every day.
All right.